There we go. Yeah.
All right. This is the Sick Nasty Deluxe Podcast, Episode 8. My brother Perry is not here tonight. He is off somewhere in California. But I have another host with me tonight, Eddie. You want to introduce yourself?
Hey, I'm Eddie. Ed, Edward, any variation on those. I run, make peculiarcomics.com. That's pretty much it.
All right, yeah. Another artist. I mean, my brother was also does a webcomic too.
So oh, nice.
It's a good continuation of that.
Nice. Yeah, I'll have to look into that. I shamefully admit I have only listened to the most recent episode of the podcast.
We don't really promote his stuff. I don't think he wants to be associated with the show, but maybe I should plug him anyway. I think it's tamarindcomic.com. It's like a fantasy.
How is that spelled?
Like the spice, I think. I don't know. I'm a terrible brother.
It's okay.
You don't have to look it up now.
Okay. Well, I'm making note of it on a sticky note. Because if it's not on a sticky note, I don't do anything about it. It's a sad way to live my life, but it happens.
Well, that's good.
Okay. There's some system there.
Yep.
But.
So today we're going to be veering back towards, you know, more comic talk. Didn't always focus on that in the past couple episodes, but I'm just feeling it tonight. So
I'm always feeling comic talk.
Probably some of the biggest news that everybody who's, you know, paid attention to comics in like the past year cares about is Brian K. Vaughan, who, you know, left to make money, came back to comics finally. I mean, he was doing like TV shows and stuff. Didn't he write for like Heroes for a little bit?
If I recall, he brought Lost back after it was like season 5 or 6.
Yeah. He was like one. And so basically, people paid him a ton of money, and he was like, "Well, comics pays me nothing." So, but I mean, like, and I recently reread one of his epics, Why the Last Man, and it just got me thinking about him again. And now I didn't realize that this was coming so soon. Saga number one, which
when
is gonna be like a what?
It's when does that come out?
Oh God! In the next like couple of months, I believe. That's why I like put it on the script, because I just saw like a full review for it, and it was just everything about it looked amazing. Fiona Staples doing the artwork on the cover, and just recently, I saw like the controversy that you put on the script.
Yeah,
her cover for issue one, which I didn't even really notice when I first like read the review of issue one, but now I'm seeing it, I'm like, that's really it's not bad at all.
I know. I didn't realize anything. The controversy here is apparent is the there are two well three technically characters depicted on the front cover, a male being, a female being, and a baby. Now, when you at first glance, it looks the female's holding the baby. Must be the mother and child. But if you look closely, she's breastfeeding. I've got no problem with this. Do you have a problem with breastfeeding?
I mean, it's definitely not anything sexual about it. It's just a woman breastfeeding of her baby.
It's not exploitative. It's tasteful. I mean, there was a Sesame Street episode about it.
Yeah, and the point is obviously to just say that on the cover, this is a family. They look weird, but, like, they're a family, and that was, like, I got that immediately from the cover, and for some reason, was it Dave Dorman?
I don't know his first name.
First name. He's a pretty big cover artist. He does a lot of stuff for Dark Horse, especially one of my favorite series, Crimson Alliance, which is a Star Wars series. And he apparently said that it was terrible to have this kind of sexual depiction for a children's book. And at first I was like, well, I didn't know it was a children's book, so I looked into it a little more, and it's not. It's definitely a sort of science fiction fantasy book for mature audiences. I mean, it clearly says that in, like, the solicitation for it. And so first off, he didn't understand what audience was for, but then it made everybody sort of think, well, breastfeeding isn't really sexual either, so even if it was for kids, I don't think anybody agreed with him.
No, it's... I don't know. I mean, on one level, I can understand it. I mean, my parents were super super conservative and restrictive of what I could see. But when that carries over to that level where you're going to complain about anyone else's right to that almost came out wrong. Someone's right to see someone breastfeed. That's a little awkward.
I mean, it's freedom of speech in general. And if somebody wants to buy your issue, they can. But you know, nobody's trying to, you know, deceive children into buying some sort of like breastfeeding pornography.
Right, right. It's one of those art versus pornography arguments. I don't know what it is, but I'll know it. I know it when I see it.
Well, I think this one is the strongest in favor of the art, though, because it's really not. Like, I don't think anybody could see it as pornographic. It's not even showing any actual anything except just inferring that the breastfeeding is happening.
Mm-hmm. It's not exploitative. It's not trying to get the viewer aroused.
No. And if anything, what he's done here is, you know, Brian K. Vaughan's been gone for a while, so I'm sure there are a bunch of new readers who don't know anything about him. But maybe this, like, news story is going to get people to be like, oh, that's interesting. And then they'll see the art, and they'll be like, well, that's nothing bad. And it actually looks amazing, because Fiona Staples is amazing.
Oh, God. Did you read Mystery Society?
Yeah, I did. Oh my God.
I want more.
I only read the first arc of that, though. I need to really get the second one.
I didn't know there was a second arc.
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, I saw it online somewhere. There are, like, two trades of it, I think.
Oh, wow. I only know the first arc. I mean, I meant to go back and double dip on the hardcovers because I want it sitting pretty on my shelves, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I've got some shopping on Amazon to do.
All right. Yeah, I mean, God. Yeah, her art is just, I need to get, like, pages of hers at, like, conventions next time I go to anything that she's at.
Wait, I'm sorry. Can you hold on for 1 second?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I am super sorry about that. I still live with my parents, and my mom came home, and I had to say, hey, and I'm doing something. So,
no, that's fine. We can edit it out.
Yes, the glory of not live audio.
It's true. I mean, like, you only have dead air if you want it. So
exactly.
You know, people will only hear me when we start talking again, and that'll be good. All right. Well, maybe that's a good segue, because we've just stopped talking about one topic, and I can get on to another one that is just constant torment for me, and that is anything having to do with Static Shock.
Okay.
Have you ever read Static Shock, or were you...
I read the first half, probably more than half of the collected edition of, like, the first...
The Milestone Static stuff?
Yeah, the original Milestone series, which I thought was amazing. I read more than half of it in one sitting. It was amazing.
So Static is like a pretty amazing character. He was made when DC Comics was trying to make a line for ethnic audiences. So he is sort of like what originally it was basically like they wanted to make a black Spider-Man, like a teenager who had a lot of great powers and was learning responsibility for it. And I grew up with like the cartoon going on, and I mean, I fell in love with the character. He was amazing. He was created by one of like the gods of like comics back then, Dwayne McDuffie, who sort of didn't R.I.P. have. I mean, like he did some stuff in animation later on that was even more amazing, but his comics sort of weren't as important later on. But Static was always like an incredibly important character to me. Like, I love the Milestone stuff. I even love when they tried to bring him into DC. They put him in the Teen Titans before the relaunch, and he really was written terribly.
But... I didn't pick up any of that. I was still more on the Marvel side of the fence when they brought the Milestone characters in. But I don't know. I want to go back and catch up, because again, like you, I was big into the cartoon show, and even the Batman, even bringing it into the DC universe back then by having Batman show up in an episode was
Just
amazing.
And then like they integrated him in the whole Paul Dini, Brian Tim, Bruce Tim universe. And it was, and like, so they had to get voice. I believe we're recording again.
Awesome. Yay, technical difficulties.
Yep. So edit that out too. All this shit to edit out.
Okay. So we were on about
Or were we just talking about X-Men in general, I think? Well, oh, no, mm-hmm. I was trying to make just an interesting point about, I like the direction that the Uncanny X-Men is going in, because they're making them into superheroes instead of just a school for mutants and stuff like that. They had that whole Celestial thing was going on, and mm-hmm. San Francisco was being destroyed. And,
oh, good times.
And they had Cyclops marching out to stop it with all of his X-Men. And they said, like, well, shouldn't we call the Avengers? This is kind of a big, you know, deal. And he's like, no, if we can't stop it, what chance are they going to have to stop it? And it was just like, you know, the X-Men are an Avengers, you know, size team. They are, they could go toe-to-toe with them. And it made me, I mean, like, it made me sort of excited for the whole new stuff they're going to do with the, you know, and maybe I shouldn't be, because it sounds like everybody's just tired of it, but the X-Men, the Avengers versus X-Men stuff sounds fun to me.
I gotta say, I am curious about it on to no end, but again, you know, to a degree, they did that in issue 6 of the X-Men, where they ran into the Avengers, and at this point, I mean, it's almost the exact same teams.
Oh yeah, well, basically what a lot of people have said is, superheroes constantly have team-ups where they begin by fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the complaints are online that they've turned that encounter that takes 3 pages normally into a 6-issue miniseries.
Oh, I thought it was something like 8 issues.
Or maybe it might be 8, but I'm just, you know, the point is that, like, people are complaining that, like, they've taken something that's usually resolved in half an issue.
Oh, I was... less.
I was about to say, a big miniseries.
I was relieved it was at least 6. You know, it was a little less than 8, but geez,
no,
that's probably because they got the. You know what? It's probably because they've got a 0 issue and they probably got some aftermath issue.
Oh yeah, definitely. And then they have the sister series, Avengers versus X-Men versus.
Oh God. Oh.
Which will be a high. I mean, like, that sounds a lot like a miniseries I think they did for World War Hulk, where they did, like, matchups.
Oh, yeah.
That was not that good, even though it had, like, Ed McGuinness on art.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, great art in that miniseries. Overall, terrible execution, and I'm afraid that might be what Avengers vs. X-Men turns into, too.
Yeah, it's one of those ones I'm trade waiting on. If it's any good, I mean, I'll definitely pick it up. I mean, I've heard good things about Schism, so I'm gonna.
Schism was amazing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna go out and pick that up. The same time, though, I mean, again, event fatigue, and you know, but you bring up an interesting point. When superheroes team up, it's usually leading up to a fight with something bigger. So,
right. Oh no, I mean, they've already talked about what the something bigger is going to be, and it's going to have something to do with the Phoenix Force, and it's going to have something to do with Hope, who is the girl who looks very much like a reincarnated Jean Grey.
I hope, honestly, I hope they don't bring Jean Grey back. Just let her die.
Whoa. There are some characters that need to come back constantly. As an X-Men fan, and a person who usually hates that kind of stuff, I still think that Jean Grey can come back as many times as she wants.
I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one.
Well, she's the Phoenix. That's all about Rebirth.
I understand, but it's all about Rebirth with every superhero character ever. Except for Uncle Ben.
There's a funny shit people say thing, and there's a shit comic book people say. I don't know if you saw that video.
I did not. I'm going to sit down one night and power through all of the shit blank says.
There's
videos.
A funny one about Asian moms, but no, this is a comic book nerd one where they just kept talking about, and it was just a guy saying, man, you know, Barry Allen will never come back to life. And he's like, fuck, Barry Allen's back alive. And it was just like, he went through like a list of people who are like, they'll never bring Bucky back. Shit, he's back.
You know what? They used to call it the Bucky rule, where Bucky...
Jason Todd's in there too,
Bucky,
I believe.
Jason Todd and Uncle Ben would never come back.
Well, it's funny because I think Jason Todd and Barry Allen really only died in the 80s, but they were sort of put into that rule too for some reason. And I wonder when that happened, where they became ones that shouldn't come back, even though they did come back eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. And, oh my God.
How would you explain Uncle Ben? Uncle Ben would ruin Spider-Man if he came back. It would ruin the whole premise.
He could never come back. There's no point to it, unless the only way I could accept something like that is if it's, let's just say, like an alternate universe Uncle Ben comes in and now Peter Parker has to deal
maybe he's like an evil pirate or something. That would be cool.
Oh, no, not even like that. Maybe he's still like a boring old man, but he's just older. So he's, you know, Peter just constantly associates all these good, happy memories with Uncle Ben.
It becomes Tuesdays with Maury, except with Uncle Tuesdays with Uncle Ben. He has to help him pee. He goes. That would be amazing. He writes them a long memoir about Uncle Ben's life and just what a brilliant person he was, but now he's old and doddering.
Oh my god, I want to see it. I want that book.
I don't think I could write an option for Marvel and let me write that book.
Oh my god, it needs to happen though. It needs, because I mean, again, like that's how I could imagine dead, you know, those long dead characters. Like even, I mean, you read Flashpoint, right?
Yeah. Some of it was really fun. Some of it was terrible. But like, overall, it was fun.
Yeah, it was fine. But I do like the twist. What was it? Was it Brian Azzarello that did, or was it Brian Wood that did the Batman arc?
It was Brian Azzarello. Okay, Brian Wood, I think, actually, his first book back, he signed an exclusive deal with Marvel.
Really now?
Oh, yeah. You should check this out if you're reading Wolverine the X-Men, and hopefully it's not too much Wolverine for you, but he's doing a Wolverine the X-Men miniseries called Alpha and Omega.
Oh, that's right, with Quentin Quire in it.
It's about Quentin Quire versus Wolverine, sort of, which is, it's sort of like this could be a storyline in the main book, but for some reason they just gave it to Brian Wood and let him run with it. It's a very weird thing. Hopefully in the future he'll be getting better Marvel books, but overall this is still fun.
I'm excited about that. Yeah.
But yeah, Brian Azzarello on the Batman Thomas Wayne thing.
Yeah, I mean, I like what they did with you know, the different Batman there, with it being Thomas Wayne instead of Bruce.
No. And the Joker. Oh my god, I absolutely loved that whole thing.
The Joker twist was amazing.
Some people were really pissy about it. I read some reviews that were not happy, but no, that was brilliant.
I thought it was amazing, but I would still like to see, you know, maybe like an alternate universe, sort of like a Flashpoint thing where Bruce and Martha get shot instead, but Bruce has to deal with his father as Batman telling, you know, and again, he's got those happy childhood memories, but he doesn't realize what kind of like an old jerk his dad's turned into.
Yeah.
Oh, and he's got I'm your father, you know, I know what's best, I've been doing this longer than you. Sort of mentality, and by the way, I'm a doctor.
Yeah. Well, at that point, if you only kill one of the parents, you basically have Hush.
Oh, that's true.
Because Hush was so he basically was, his father got killed, and he had to live with his mother, and he kept trying to kill his mother, and he was such a mess. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of what happens when only one of the parents die, I guess. But you don't know if that would really be it, because Thomas Wayne was supposed to be such a great person, and so was, you know, Martha.
Oh, still, yeah, but I mean, still, you've got the, and I think that was one of the things Morrison touched on in the Batman RAP arc, and even into the Return of Bruce Wayne, where it was the, you know,
know Thomas Wayne, yeah,
exactly. And I think now I haven't read this miniseries, but I think that's kind of what Scott Snyder is trying to do with his Batman run.
Did you not have? Did you read Gates of Gotham?
Not yet. I'm still reading the Black Mirror. I've got the hardcover, and I'm loving it so far.
Neither of those don't really. Oh no, I guess there is some mention of the Gates in the Black Mirror a little bit, but that was sort of. I think he was just doing a mini arc to test him out. And it didn't sell very well because nobody was reading Detective. So they switched him on to Batman in the reboot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, but
everybody buys more issues of the named series, just like Superman.
Right. Right. Although, I don't know, I'm curious. I haven't heard good things about what Perez has been doing, but I am curious to see where Giffen and... what was it? Who's the other one? I am totally blanking on the two people writing. Keith Giffen
Jenkins.
And... Dan Jurgens.
Jurgens. He's one of those fill-in writers.
Yeah, but I mean, he's the guy who created Booster Gold and...
Yeah, Blue Beetle.
Yeah. Oh, no,
Well, the second Blue Beetle.
Steve Ditko did. I thought Steve Ditko did Blue Beetle.
Really? Well, I thought, I didn't know that either of them existed before, God, what was it? Before Justice League International? I don't know. That was the earliest I ever read them.
I read this really old Blue Beetle story, and I thought it was his first appearance. I could be completely wrong, but it was a...
Okay, so, convention stuff, you were talking about Behind the Table.
Yeah, and... But, I mean, it's fun to see that... that sort of behavior on the other end, because, and you know, you can write it, because it, as we mentioned, you know, that awkward dance of, here's my binder full of stuff because you made eye contact with me. If I caught someone trying to walk by and they locked eyes with me, I just kind of give them a nod and turn away as if I was paying attention to someone else. Right. And 9 times out of 10, they walked away. And it was, you know.
At least you're not, like, doing some weird dance with somebody where then they walk over because they feel obligated, and then they just look at your stuff, but they're never going to buy anything. They're just doing it because they feel like they're obligated now to look at your wares.
Exactly. I mean, if someone's going to look through my stuff, I'd rather it be because something caught their eye, not because of any sort of weird feeling, social obligation.
Well, on the opposite end of it, I'm actually the guy who will, you know, look through everything, look very closely at pretty much everybody's work, but I very rarely buy anything. And I don't know if people really hate that, but I am a guy who is very picky when it comes to Artist Alley, because I'm looking at people's work, and nobody, most of the time, especially at anime conventions, nobody's been published. These are
right.
People that are doing it out of pocket, and for the most part, they're probably just trying to break even. They're not even trying to make profits.
Oh, yeah, no, that's the thing, like, going to this and setting up at one of these shows, you can't ever, you know, unless you've been signed and published, and even then, you know, you really can't think this way. You cannot go into it thinking I'm going to make money, or even think I'm going to break even. I've only been to a couple things. Between trading away a lot of my stock for other stuff, and
yeah,
you know, buying a lot of stuff that I thought, oh, this is shiny and new and cool, and you know, even on the other end, oh, you're nice, but your work's not that great, but you're nice, so I'll give you money for this book, and think, oh, you bought something of mine. Okay, now I feel like this purchase is a little justified, and I'll never read this ever.
Yeah, and generally what happens to me is, like, I'll look at something they have, and I'll say, like, well, I like your style, but you don't really have anything drawn here that I like, so, you know, do you do sketches? And I feel like you end up with a lot of times at those kind of conventions, at least anime conventions, they don't do a whole lot of, commissions. And so, like, it's hard to explain it. Sometimes I did a theme book of Green Lantern sketches, and I just brought a bunch of pictures with me and gave them to the artist that I liked at this Artist Alley. And said, like, you know, can you give me this in your style or something like that? And I ended up pretty well off with something like that. So if someone's looking to do a sketchbook, just make sure you bring something, because a lot of times you might end up with artists that have no clue what character you're talking about, even if you think they're a very popular character.
Oh yeah, I've heard horror stories about that, where, you know, I forget who it was. I think it was even on Around Comics, where they were talking to one artist, and he's like, yeah, it's the worst thing, you know. You get this book from this kid, and he's really excited for you to draw his favorite character, and you have to tell him that you don't know who that is, and he just kind of walks away.
And then the kid if they try to describe it to you, you're like, listen, buddy, you try and get me a picture, because your description is not going to come out the way you think it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you end up doing a lot of commissions for people at those shows?
Oh, hell no. No. And again, these are, like, smaller. It's,
yeah,
honestly,
well, I mean,
a lot,
like,
of...
I've never tried that at a small press expo before.
Oh, well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, people would be happy to do it. It's just a lot of these small press things are to be entirely honest about it, kind of masturbatory, where it's just a lot of people who, at the same time, I mean, they're super fun. I mean, it's a lot of people who really love this adventure they're going on, whether it's to break into the industry or just, you know, something to do to escape from the wife and kids, or husband and kids in some cases,
yeah.
To be completely fair.
Just lovers, they're lovers and kids.
They're goats.
Yeah.
They're farms. But, right. You know,
there are a lot of farmer artists out there.
No, I don't know where I was going with that.
It's a pastel with, you know, cow patty or something.
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes you get some backwoodsy folk doing their comics, and they're like, I don't know. I got a little bit of that at the Zine Fest in Richmond. You had a couple more
about how to wrestle chickens.
Oh no! Just it's almost like this. It's almost like completely disconnected from the comics community. Like, some guy did, like, this weird psychedelic book of mazes.
Ooh, see, I love that kind of stuff. That's right up my alley.
Yeah, but I mean, he was kind of a folksy good old boy, you know, not much a comics person, but, you know, super nice guy, and it was, you know, it was something interesting there that I would, you know, I would have never seen that at a mainstream comics show. And if it was there, it would have been buried away in the tiny and back in a corner somewhere.
Right next to the guy who makes vaginas out of toy soldiers or something.
Exactly. And yeah. Somebody, you know, and on the other side, on the other side of someone who was in like an episode of Doctor Who in 1968.
Yes. The first guy who was inside a Dalek.
Oh my God. Actually, to take a quick trip down the Doctor Who lane, something you should listen to. Have you ever heard of the Geek Syndicate Network?
I have not.
It's all UK podcasts, but it started off with one, and it's just kind of a general geek podcast, but the main one ended, and they branched out into a couple ones, but one of them that goes on is, well, there are two of them, Time Lore, where they kind of go back and review episodes of Doctor Who from the very beginning.
Ooh, is that anything like Tom versus the Flash, where they go and where he just reads old Flash comics?
A little bit, actually, but right, it's a couple people.
So they explain what's happening so you don't have to know the episode.
Right.
Okay,
right.
That sounds like right up my alley. Yeah.
And then there's another one called Dissecting Worlds, where it makes you feel smart for having geek knowledge, and they do different series of them where they analyze these different sci-fi and fantasy franchises based around a common theme for that series. Like the one they're on now is leadership. They did one about military. They did one about politics. Just the different way these worlds exist within those realms. And so they did kind of a they've yet to put up the second part, but I cannot wait for it. Where since they're on their leadership series now, they're talking about the Doctor as a leader, and they're going through each of the different Doctors and breaking it down, and it is incredibly fascinating to a point where I feel like I should be doing something worthwhile with my life. At the same time, I feel like this is something worthwhile.
It must be, you know, just talking about people who cosplay, like the Doctor Who is a big popular thing now. I see tons of people cosplaying it, so it's definitely pop culture.
Hey, bow ties are cool.
Yeah, exactly. Stetsons are cool. Fezzes are cool.
Cool.
All this shit is cool now.
See, I wear a bow tie a lot. Well, not as much as I used to. It's more of a springtime thing. In the winter, I just don't care. But out and about, not even like at shows or anything, although I do get asked if I'm wearing a bow tie to a comic show, people ask if I am Doctor Who, if I'm cosplaying Eleven, and no, I just like wearing the bow tie, genuinely, not ironically, like frat boys do.
But Matt Smith doesn't wear it ironically either. He's just trying to be, he thinks it really is cool. I believe that.
Yes, I would too, because he seems awesome.
He's amazing.
But yeah, like the number one line I get is, bow ties are cool, to which I say thank you. The number two line is, oh, where is either your Stetson or your Fez?
Mm.
And the answer to that is, it's in the TARDIS, which right next to the other one you didn't mention. So they say, where's your Stetson? I say it's in the TARDIS next to the Fez.
You can't wear them both, though.
No.
I don't know why what they're expecting.
No, you know what? You could. It would take either balancing or some sort of adhesive.
Could be a big Stetson, maybe.
Big, very, very big Stetson.
Over a tiny Fez. All right. I think that's maybe this is a good stopping point. Maybe we've run out of things to talk about.
We've reached the delirium point.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because I've had a whole bottle of delirium now, so that's a good point.
Is that what is that how we're coding it? Because I've totally killed off a bag of delirium, a couple syringes full of delirium.
Well, yeah, definitely. you're right about that. But yeah, thank you for joining me on my podcast.
You're very
possibly,
welcome.
Possibly I might request of you for next week too if you have some time.
Yeah,
because with my brother still being out of town for about 3 weeks. I'm just looking to fill some time, and you may stay on when he comes back, because I was always looking for three people anyway.
Right, whenever you need me, I.